Paul, obviously the news on Wednesday night that GAA has been demoted effectively from an elite sport. First of all, I'm sure you were surprised, as many of us were, with the news.
I was surprised, Dave, yeah. I suppose, you know, you were hearing positive sounds coming out of the GAA. People were saying that there was a possibility there'd be a return to action in March, which would mean, you know, originally the GPA had looked for 6 weeks running to a return to competitive action, and then they agreed to a compromise of 4 weeks. So that would have meant that you were getting back training at the start of March, at least. But fortunately, it didn't come to pass. And I think, you know, I'm sure there's political machinations at work here behind the scenes. And you know, it's just hard to know how much of a shock this came as to the leadership in Croke Park, because I have seen it reported that they were under the impression that they still had the green light to go ahead with training, and that the decision had been made by them effectively all along, and suddenly they sort of had the rug pulled from under them and were told that in actual fact they hadn't had the green light to resume training under Level 5 restrictions. But at the same time, I think that it's a money issue, because I just don't think the GAA could afford to run the National Leagues without either fans at the games, which was generating income for them, or a grant from the government. So that was a big factor in it as well, I think.
Of course, yes, they're interesting factors indeed. What's the impression you've got from the people that you'd be close to in the GAA circles through your day job, we'll say? What's the impression? Is it surprise or shock that they're not going to be playing for quite a number more months?
I suppose the overwhelming emotion I have to take it is probably disappointment and little bit of frustration. In fairness, everyone I've been speaking to has been kind of saying like the most important thing is the public health situation at the moment. But we'll say from a Cavan point of view, Cavan would have been hoping to get back into action as soon as possible, because Cavan obviously have momentum on their side after winning the Ulster Championship last November 22nd. None of us would have been in a hurry.
Certainly not.
Had a short break and trained away. The nights were good coming out of the camp. They had been doing a lot of individual running programs and things like that. So the players are in very good shape, and we're looking forward to the short running. So from a Cavan point of view, maybe that's selfish to look at it that way. So there certainly would be disappointment. I spoke to Susan Brady, the PRO of the county board, a couple of days ago, and she said she wasn't surprised by the news, but she was disappointed. And the phrase she used was complete uncertainty. Nobody seems to know, and nobody can know what's going to happen. So I think the powers that be in Croke Park are sort of handcuffed on this. They're not able to really give the sort of guidance that the members at grassroots want, because they just don't know what's happening. And there's probably an element of frustration when you see other sports like Electricity League, would say, or even the other second tier of that league, it's got to go ahead. But I know that there's certain livelihoods dependent on that as well. But it's a tricky one. It's just a real bind that they find themselves in. But I suppose, yeah, uncertainty and sort of frustration are the overriding emotions.
Of course, absolutely. Now, one point that was made by the Longford Town manager, Dara Doyle, was that GAA is an amateur sport. He's a fan of the sport, as he said himself, but it's all but amateur, really. It's a professional in all so many aspects of its outlook, and maybe that has muddied the waters or caused an issue with the GAA this time round.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, I'm sure it has. But you could argue that a lot of Olympic sports are amateur as well. Like, our high performance boxers are amateur, even though they're funded. So you're getting into a grey area there. Like, where do you stop? Is there a certain level of funding that you must be on from Sport Ireland before you classify it as professional? I think it's not a black and white situation. Like, you should be looking at it and saying, like, how many hours a week they're putting into it, for one thing. The general interest in the sport, I think it would have to be a factor, and the crowds and the money that the sport turns over, they would all be factors that I would look at. Like, personally, I'm involved in handball, and I know a lot of handball players at the top level of the game would be training to the same degree as intercounty senior footballers and hurlers. They would classify as elite athletes, but they wouldn't take a lot of those boxes. And I'd say a lot of the soccer players wouldn't take those boxes. And a lot of them would, in fairness. And a lot of them are professional. So, you know, can you take away someone's livelihood? Well, the argument could be made that there's many thousands of people whose livelihoods have been taken away over the course of the various lockdowns as well. So look, I don't envy the powers to be it in Leinster House or in Croke Park. Like, it is a very tough one.
Of course, absolutely. Now, there's also some other suggestions, maybe some of the actions the GAA took. Like, there's an impression in particular from the soccer circle that maybe some of those celebrations down the country that we saw around the club championships, impressions as well that maybe, for instance, in League of Ireland games when fans were allowed, that there was temperature checks being taken on supporters entering the ground, something that wasn't happening in the GAA. And maybe this is caused the decision by the government to demote GAA effectively.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was a factor, Dave. You have to remember that it is a political discussion at this stage, and when you get into the world of politics, the optics are very important. We saw that with the whole discussion around golf. We had the so-called golf gate that went on over in the west of Ireland, where politicians attended a golf dinner dance, and that went against the grassroots golfers. I know I'm a member of a golf club, a very poor golfer that I am, but I would definitely make the case that it's safe to go out and play golf within 5 kilometres of your home. I think there couldn't be much safer, and there'd certainly be huge benefits accruing, especially for older members of the community. But the golf gate put paid to that because of the optics of it. So maybe the GAA are suffering from what we saw from some of the county final celebrations. And there's no doubt, though, there were clusters of COVID cases linked to those county final celebrations. I think nobody can deny that. So that was a factor. Maybe it was irresponsible on behalf of some players or supporters, or maybe it was irresponsible on behalf of publicans that allowed their premises to come overcrowded at the time. Or maybe this is just going to happen. Maybe this virus is seasonal and people are going to come together regardless when the temperature gets colder. So all these things we don't really know. And it just left, day-to-day life is sort of uncertain at the minute. So where does that leave you with sport? Really, it's just a total grey area in almost every aspect.
Absolutely, yes, you're quite right there. Day-to-day is totally different nowadays for everyone across the country. Paul, just finally in around this change, do you think, is this going to have a long-term impact on Gaelic games? Because it's only natural now that sports editors across the country, whether it be radio stations, television or news, or newspapers rather, that GAA coverage is just going to have to drop for a couple of months, and there will be more rugby, more soccer, because they're going to be live sports. Will this have a long-term impact on Gaelic games?
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't actually thought of it like that. Will you see people moving away from Gaelic games and going to other sports that are going ahead in some form? It's possible, I suppose. I know, and again, to mention handball that I'm involved in, I think that there's a lot of concern there that you've probably seen 12 months, maybe you're going to see 18 months worth of new juvenile players that haven't been introduced to the game. So from that point of view, it's going to have a big effect on smaller sports like handball down the line. I'd imagine Gaelic games have a strong enough presence in every parish in the country and strong enough tradition that they should be fine, that they can get over a blip like this. Like we have seen it in the past, various times where there's been interruptions to the game, like thinking of the war and foot and mouth and things like that. And I think Gaelic games has survived. Where it's going to have the biggest effect, I think, is in the actual preparation of teams. So we had a very interesting chat with Mick Graham there a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying how teams can now go and prepare on their own. So the likes of Cavan or Monaghan or really any county in the Midlands or in the West, they've got a huge amount of players usually in Dublin or in the cities. And first of all, it costs a fortune. Like travel expenses cost Cavan 308,000 in 2019, which was the last full season that we had, which was huge. And the players are well entitled to that. But there's a huge cost factor. But not alone financially, there's the hours that they put into it. And it's unhealthy to be spending 10 or 12 hours in your car driving up and down the road and get back and you're losing sleep. And there's a whole pile of factors playing into it. Whereas it was sort of forced on county teams that they had to go and train remotely. And they realised, hold on, this actually works, that players don't have to come down the road from Dublin every night of the week. We don't have to meet up as a group. They all have experts, strength and conditioning coaches and so on. And they could just meet up maybe once a month and test and see how players are. And what it's actually doing, and I know what it's done with Cavan, is it's created a real competitiveness because they're now tested every now and then, and they're running times and their various measures of athletic output. And it's created a leaderboard, and they're really competitive, and they're actually training probably harder than they ever were, but yet they don't have all this extra pressure and cost and hassle of travelling. So I think that's going to be the biggest knock-on effect. Also, I suppose, away from the playing field, we can now see that the committees can operate perfectly well remotely, that you don't need all the cost and time and hardship of travelling and being on the road and running up expense and everything else. for committees to meet up, they can function fine. So I think that's going to have a big effect on the GAA. They've actually run the Congress now, just the annual gathering of the tribes of the GAA. They've run that remotely now, and it's been quite successful. So that in itself is going to have a huge impact as well. So I think these are all positive impacts. Like, the negative impacts, I suppose, are clear to be seen. But I think there's going to be a positive legacy from it as well. And even in terms of how the GAA structure the competition, it's probably going to have a positive legacy. So from that point of view, maybe, just maybe, there might be some light at the end of the tunnel, Liv.